I will tell you, this isn't a morning that I'm especially excited about. I think it will be special. Now, what you might have heard is that this is a marriage panel, and I will probably tell you, this is like no marriage panel you have ever heard. And I say that because we actually had a marriage panel for Abide last year, and the women walked away saying that was the most impactful thing they had ever heard on the subject. And so I decided this would be a perfect opportunity to bring them to share with you guys. And I want to say Sarah Swaggles was part of this panel before, and what's interesting is the day that she shared, the very next day, her marriage blew up. And I remember getting that call, and it was like, oh my gosh, you had just shared. And she had said she wanted to be here and share, but she felt like she wasn't in a place to do that. And so I just want to honor her. She said something beautiful to me in the text where she said, I don't think I can do it this season in my life. She said, people are marginalized through marriage in ways that we don't necessarily even recognize in our church communities. And one of the things you're going to hear is how some of these women have maybe felt marginalized, and that part of our heart in hearing about marriage is to hear about other people's experiences and gain sensitivities to what other people have navigated. But I will assure you that as these women share, you will have new perspective on your own marriage. That God, I trust he wants to speak to each one of us about our own marriage. So what we have on this panel this morning is we have divorcees. We have a widow. We have somebody who's single and never been married and how her perspective on marriage. And we have somebody who's in a good marriage but has all the hard that comes with a good marriage. And so this is not intended to be a downer. I think what's interesting is they all came in, they're like, I don't want to be a downer in this really sweet, lovely group. This is not going to be a downer. I actually think you're going to find this to be so life-giving purely by the fact that people are sharing their vulnerable stories. So that said, I'm going to actually have them introduce themselves as they share. So we're just going to go down. This is not a panel, by the way, where they're just going to each share, okay? And then at the end, I will invite some questions if there are questions, but I'm just giving each of them an opportunity to share a little bit about them. One other thing I will say, each of these women is part of our Grace Church community, and they all matter, and I love each of them dearly. And so I love that you guys are getting a flavor of other people in our community that aren't in your same stage of life, because I think that's super important. It's one of the gifts that we have at Grace is we're very diverse in terms of generationally and what we can offer. So I'm excited, and so I'm going to start with Sandra. Here's Sandra.
Okay. And Michelle, thank you for being vulnerable. I don't even know you, but I tend to be very upfront, and I can tell you guys are a very open and honest group, so it makes it a little easier. I'm going to read this just to try to stay on point. I'm Sandra Grant, married almost 25 years to Mike. We've got three kids, 23, 22, and 19. We're recent empty nesters. And I just love seeing all your little babies because that was my favorite stage. I always just wanted to be a mom. Didn't even know if I'd live to be past that, but I always prayed that God would let me be a mom. If I had to summarize my talk, I think I would say don't blink and don't stop working on your marriage. When Christina first asked me to do this, it was easy to say, yeah, no problem. And then it felt like the very next day spiritual attacks started happening. I felt like I couldn't even talk to my husband without getting in a fight. It was crazy. And then I'm like, okay, wait. Am I supposed to be the good marriage? Oh, shoot. And I felt like Satan was like how he does that. So I went to Christina. I'm like, hey, maybe you can choose somebody else. She's like, no, they need to hear this. So here we go. What you will get from me is what a real marriage looks like when two sinners come together. If nothing else, I'm authentic and honest. I don't sugarcoat much. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Enneagram, but it seems like a lot of your generation is. So I'm an 8-wing 7, which means I'm a kind of a leader challenger, but I like to have fun. My husband's a 3-wing 2, which he's a achiever and helper. So that gives you maybe a little bit of an idea of some of our issues. A short synopsis of our story. When Mike and I first started dating, my dad was my hero, and he was diagnosed with colon cancer. Mike actually met him in the hospital. So I felt like we dated for 10 months and all of that was going on. We got engaged for 5 months, got married. 2 months later, I was pregnant, which wasn't on our plan because he had just started a new job that wasn't making very much money. So our first year of marriage, Mike had a new job, was 100% commission. We moved away from our community to try to save money. I quit my job. My dad died. 2 weeks later, our son was born. So we were in survival mode, to say the least. But we both do chaos well. We're able to put our head down, remove the emotion, and get things done. Which sounds like a good thing, not always. When we were first married, we were good with, we were intentional with date nights. The three A's, if you guys know what that is, the affirmation, apology, affection, couch time. So we'd have our, you know, our little time on the couch while the kids were doing their own thing. And then somehow that just kind of slipped away in the busyness of life. I think without us even realizing it, I started homeschooling my kids through high school. Mike, being the achiever, worked a lot. He was gone a lot. And I knew we were missing some intimacy and connection, and so I'd try to reach out, and either because he wasn't able or he was so focused on work, it was just a miss. And so I would be hurt, I'd put a brick up, and tell myself I wasn't going to let that happen again. And so began the dance that we started doing. I remember there was one day, it was so bad that I thought, okay, Sandra, just go write in your journal all the positive qualities of Mike's that you can think of. So I sat down, and I could not think of one. And that's where I realized, okay, Satan's been busy, because everybody has at least something you can think of. So that was an eye-opener for me, and I thought, okay, Lord, open my eyes to what his positive qualities are and close my eyes to the negative ones. Very shortly after that, I don't remember the timing, I was working out with a friend, and I started, it was like someone drew a line down my face, and I was going numb on half of my body, and I tried to reach over to tell him that I was feeling weird, and it came out, and I'm like, whoa, I thought I was going to die, which wasn't even scary for some reason, but then I thought I was going to be a vegetable, which was terrifying. And anyway, so through all that, they didn't find anything wrong, don't know what it was. I actually, in hindsight, think it was a gift from God, because it helped me to see for a year and a half or 2 years, I couldn't see anything wrong with Mike. I was just like, my sister asked, who was my total confidant, she's like, how are you guys doing? I'm like, we're great. She said, what's changed? And I'm like, gosh, our circumstances had not changed, really. You know, everything was the same. But God just allowed me to see all the positive qualities in him. And it was my perspective. That's what he showed me. And I was reminded of this Sunday. I don't know if you guys were at church, but Dave shared a John Milton quote that said, the mind is its own place and in itself can make a heaven of hell and a hell of heaven. So anyway, I'll try to hurry. I would like to say that I learned that lesson well and stayed there. Unfortunately, after a couple years, that kind of wasn't the same. My mom became sick. I was her primary caregiver for a few years until she passed away 5 years ago. So the chaos kind of continued. Put my head down, put on your big girl panties, do the next thing. More chaos, more hurt, more bricks, same dance. Now that the dust has settled and we finally have more margin, we realize the unhealthy patterns we've built and the work we have to do. So I would say, I guess, the good of this, Christina, is that it made me realize we need to go to counseling, and we haven't been able to figure this out on our own. So we've been going, and I'm super excited to see what God's going to do, because for the first time, I feel like we have marriage, or we have margin where we can, it's just us. And instead of me looking across the table at like, I don't like this person very much, I'm dreading empty nesting, I'm super excited because I can see how God has been faithful in helping Mike change and helping me change, see that it's perspective, see that I'm prideful, and just see these other things. And I'm just super excited and excited to spend time with my husband, who really is a gift from God, and he's a wonderful man. So that's what I would say. Don't blink and don't be afraid to keep doing the hard work, even though you guys are in the chaos of it. It just goes like this.
Hi, I'm Catherine, and my story that I'm going to share with you, it's hard, it's sad, and there's some ugly parts to it. And I thought a lot about how much of it to share with you guys. And at the end of the day, I just came to the realization that it is what it is. And so I'm just going to basically briefly share it with you. And then just some things that have helped me get through this. So I got married in 2004, and a year into my marriage, I got pregnant, also not planned. And when kids arrived on the scene, things started to get tough, just because it was no longer about us anymore. And just life's hardships of kids and jobs and relationships, We just struggled, and neither of us had a good model of marriage, and we just didn't have the tools to work through these things in a healthy way. And so just if you had asked me anytime during those years, you know, what the hard thing in my life was, it was always my marriage. So fast forward, three kids. In January of 2015, I found out that my husband was having an affair. So we separated for 6 months. And during that time, I strongly felt that I needed to stay in this, that I needed to sit in it and just see what God was going to do. So over the course of the next 4 years, we tried really hard to reconcile our marriage. There was a lot of, we went to a lot of counseling. A lot of that we was me. counseling, just individual therapy, marriage therapy. I was in a support group, read a lot of books, met with a lot of people. Like there was just considerable effort to try to reconcile the marriage, and it just wasn't turning around. And so at the end of 2018, we decided to get divorced. So here I am. I'm 14 months into living in separate households and in the process of divorce. So that's where my story is today. The things, as I look back on this journey, that have really helped me is that the first one is that I've really clung to God's promises. I've written them down. I've prayed them. When I've just been in my lowest moments, like I've recited them in my head. And some of those are just that God would make beauty from ashes. Through this process, I've experienced deep grief, deep repentance, and God has really brought a lot of redemptive moments through that. In Romans 8:28, he tells us that God works all things for good together, for good for those who love him. In Isaiah 43:2, it says, "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. When you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned." And God has been with me through this process in a big way. He's been faithful to give me joy in the midst of suffering. I've prayed that a lot. And God has been faithful to just give me some really sweet times with my kids, with my girlfriends, with my family. The second thing that I've really clung to is prayer. Like, I've learned through this process to really be on my knees and just to, like, bare my soul. And it has looked so differently over the years. But just, you know, I've just had to ask and cry and vent and just all of those things to God. And I just feel like through prayer, he's really given me strength. Just to make it one more day or to get through this experience. And then I've also really had to ask for prayer from my community. And I remember specifically when it became clear, you know, over the last couple of years when I needed to leave the church that I had been at for over a decade. You know, I texted my group of women during the week and said, I really think I need to move churches. And a girlfriend said, "Come sit with me at Grace this Sunday. I'll be saving a seat for you." And so I did. I went to Grace the next Sunday, and I've been here ever since. That was in June, I think three and a half years ago. And that fall, I started going to Abide at Night because as much as I wanted to isolate and I was in such a world of hurt, I knew that I needed to be with community and I needed to be in God's word. And so I wouldn't make myself do these things. So I was in Abide at Night, and when they were going around asking for prayer requests, I said, you know, and my prayer requests were hard. And these women, I know Joy was there, they just stood up and walked over to me and said, "Can we pray for you?" And they laid their hands on me, and they hardly knew me, and just prayed over me. And I will never forget that moment, because that's when I knew that this was a church who prayed, and that I desperately needed that. And these women have been faithful to pray for me, and I felt the strength from that. Okay, I've also had to really shift my mindset to live in a state of gratitude, because I had so much anger, which eventually turned into bitterness because I let it linger, and it wasn't good. And so I really had to make myself write down the things I was grateful for, and I would drive to work, and I would just, like, say the list in my head, and that really changed my mindset, like, gratitude counteracts bitterness in a big way. And I still had so many good things in my life. And so that's really changed, like, who I am at the core, is just living in a positive way and living in a state of gratitude. Okay, so another thing that really helped me was just to, huge thing. Just my women. Women have been my rock during all of this. God has really blessed me with some incredible women who have walked this journey with me. I have a whole new appreciation for the bear one another's burdens, because it is not easy. My problem is not short and quick. It has been hard and deep and long-lasting, and just the women that have walked with me in this, like, have loved into me in a really big way. When I've gone off the rails, they have pointed me back to Jesus. They prayed for me, they've listened to me, and so just, it's just such a blessing, to be connected as women. Okay, and lastly, you know, life is just hard, and a blogger that I follow, you know, she kind of coined this phrase, life is brutiful. You know, life is brutal and life is beautiful. And it's so true. And, you know, brutal is not even an understatement. Like, there are desperately hard times, you know, where, you know, I've just said, okay, let me just make it through this day, or, anyway, but it has also just been peppered with such beautiful moments, too. So divorce, you know, divorce is, it's ugly and it's hard and it's broken and it's not the way it's meant to be. It's not the way God designed it to be. And I feel, like, heartbroken that this is where I am. But I also know that this is not the end of my story. This is a part of my story. I'm choosing to trust that God has a good plan for my life. Even though I wouldn't wish this experience on anyone, I wouldn't go back and be the woman that I was 5 years ago for anything. Through this, God has, like, built my perseverance. He's grown me in ways I never could have imagined. He's stripped idols and hard things out of my life. And it's been really painful, and I've had to do a lot of work, to get to a good place. But that's the redemptive part in this, and that's what God does in our lives. So yeah, I guess that's all I wanted to share. Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Joy Young, and when Christina first asked me to do the, well, to re-ask me to do the panel the second time a couple months ago, I was like, sure, if I'm not married by then, right? But fortunately for you guys, I'm here today. for you guys, just kidding. But that's actually an important distinction to start off with, because I'm well aware that, like, my single situation could change at any moment. I could go to Starbucks after this and meet the man of my dreams. But I also have to start to realize that this could be a permanent state for me. I think that there's more and more of us in the church that are in this stage of life. This is extended singleness. And I kind of liken it to the modern day widow, the modern day version of the biblical widow. Not to take away from actual widows, but I feel like it's two sides of the same coin, because the questions become, where do we fit in? How are we ministered to? Where's our security? And I rewatched the video from the Abide panel, and I mentioned in it that I was 2 months into a round of unemployment, and ironically, I'm a few weeks into another round of unemployment currently. And as independent as I am, or that I try to be, the question still is, where's my safety net, and can that be found in the church? Given that I'm kind of this extended single classifications, I tend to make a lot of observations. One distinction that I've noticed between married or parents and singles is the level of highs and lows. I fully understand as a single that I get to miss out on some of the most gut-wrenching sorrows that you guys maybe have already experienced, whether that's a husband's betrayal, a sick child, a 2-year-old at Target that just won't stop screaming. I get to sleep in on Saturdays if I want to. I don't have to spend money on diapers, and I'm sure I have a lot less gray hairs and wrinkles than if I had had kids. But the other thing I miss is I miss some of the greater joys. A wedding day, somebody calling me mama, my child singing the loudest at the preschool performance, because I'm sure my child would be the one singing the loudest. So I imagine it that while a parent's life goes between highs and lows like this, a single's life might be like this. And, we all have health issues, we all have job struggles, we all have parents to care for, but I think there's joys and sorrows that belong exclusively to you guys. And that's why I feel like I've heard numerous times that parents say that the single most fantastic and the single most challenging thing that they've ever done is to become a parent. And the problem for me is that I can see no scenario with my life as it is now on its current trajectory that will be nearly as fulfilling as a life with those highs and lows. My prayer has not been for a boyfriend for Christmas, even though that's my favorite Christmas, cheesy Christmas movie. Like, seriously, it's the best. The prayer really is that if I'm single for now or forever, I still need my life to be fulfilling. I still need companionship. I still need security. And at this point, I feel like I need God to show up in ways that he hasn't been. When you reach your upper 30s and you're single, there's a stigma that descends on you. I know everyone in the room has been single, but given the fact that you're in this room means that you've never been single. And I know being single at 30 is different than being single at 25, and being single at 35 was different than being single at 30. I feel like the years multiply exponentially rather than just add together. I originally thought I would just use the same script that I used for Abide, and then I realized that that wasn't going to be possible. Because at Abide, the vast majority of the women were older than me. And you guys are my peers. In fact, I'm probably older than a lot of you. Last year, I actually worked for Grace in the children's ministry, and actually women's ministry a little bit too. And when I took the position, Christina and I talked very candidly about how helping with this ministry in particular was going to be extra hard for me because it's one that I should be in. It's an obvious reminder to me of the question of, will I just forever hold other people's babies? And again, you guys are my peers, and the other single women at Grace are 5 to 10 years younger than me. And even though I love and appreciate all of them, Blessing in particular is kind of a reminder of this club that I'm not qualified to join. Not saying it's not a good ministry. It's highly valuable, just to be clear on that. I think it's awesome that it exists. It's just a point of, struggle for me. And if you think about it, I actually know less women in this room than I thought I would, but of the ones that I know, a lot of you I know through your kids. And that's not just because I love babies, but you guys know that I do love babies. It's actually a way that I use to try to break down some of those club walls, because otherwise, when would we interact? One of my main goals today is to encourage you to help break those walls too with the singles that you encounter at Grace or other places, or even maybe married women that don't have kids, whether that's yet or forever. I do think that these walls exist kind of naturally. I mean, there's only so much that I can't relate to a baby crying all night. I can't relate to mastitis. I actually was even going to use that example before I knew that was going to be brought up this morning. But also for me, my 27-year-old other single friends can't relate to like my almost 40 metabolic slowdown while they're like munching on a donut, you know, with no thought at all to it, you know. So married moms or not, I need community in my own age group as well. So I'm asking you today to be mindful of this club and to invite singles into the crazy. One example is, some of you know Jen Tarr, and she had this Christmas caroling event, and she invited a ton of families and like me and one other single girl. And it was crazy and it was fantastic, and I was happy to be involved in it even though I couldn't contribute to the kid headcount. I would also ask that you don't see singles as just a potential babysitter. Sure, I might watch your kid one day as, to help a friend, but I don't want to be your employee. It feels a bit juvenile. I've been babysitting since I was about 12. And I think it affects the power dynamics of the relationship. And I kind of wrestle with explaining this because some people might not bother them, or it's like this very nuanced emotional thing for me. But the best analogy that I could come up with, and it's an imperfect analogy, but I don't think anyone in this room would ask me to come over and clean their house and offer to pay me for it. Now, we might be chatting and you might say, oh my gosh, my closet is exploding and I don't know what looks good on me anymore. I might come over and help you make those decisions and organize your closet. Or if you were sick for like a week, and I might actually come vacuum your floor and scrub your toilets, but it would be out of a mutual relationship, not a paid one. Example, Nicole Hill and I have known each other for about 13 years. We used to be roommates, and if at any point she was in a bind with kids, there'd be no hesitation on my part to watch Catherine or David. So hopefully that explains that little concept a little bit better. I would also ask that you don't see singles as incomplete or on pause, and that's actually something that I really struggle with because the culture is so promoting of that stigma. Sometimes being single feels like I'm stuck on the proverbial kids' table, and it's actually something I have to battle in my own family. And we all can agree that nobody likes unsolicited advice, but somehow with singleness, it's an area that people like to give it, not unlike unsolicited advice in parenting, which I'm sure you've all experienced, so I know you can relate on that. Finally, don't just automatically assume that a single person is not okay with their life. Sure, I have days or seasons where the loneliness sets in, or I just want to take advantage of the double occupancy rates. Or there's times where the ticking of the clock does get really loud. But I also have days and seasons where I'm perfectly content and actually worry about being too okay with my singleness. I also have to recognize that given my medical history, I might not be able to have a child of my own. But all of that combined, I fully believe that you can be content with where you're at and still welcome a change to that in the future. So in a lot of ways, I do feel connected to some of the women in this room, so I don't want it to be super negative. And I also don't know if there's ever any way to completely eliminate this kind of sense of these clubs or this obstacle to connection. But I hope that I've provided a little bit of insight into that.
My name is Leslie Casserly, and you guys are great. How many of you guys have seen the movie The Marriage Story? Okay, well, I have a spoiler alert. It's not about marriage. Somebody said it should be called The End of Marriage Story. In fairness, it was really well done. It was so well done that it was very painful to me. Because it was ultimately brought out such ugliness. It was how two people justify things that they swore they'd never do. I know that Catherine probably can relate to that. One review I read said, it's a great movie you may never want to see again. And another was, it was an emotionally lacerating experience, which is a good description of divorce. Every time I fill out forms, I have to check the box that says divorced. Nobody cares now if I'm male or female, but they care about what my marital status is. I was always the good girl. My sisters would say the goody two-shoes girl, and I didn't want to disappoint my parents. So when my husband and I separated, I was actually thankful that both of my parents had died. Because even if you want a divorce, it's the ultimate in rejection. It's like, am I not worth fighting for? And I thought he probably felt the same way. The shared memories between the two of us are either gone or they're painful to remember. During counseling, I was told that we each have a part. And so I generously put my part at 3%. So his were so obvious that I thought that's really easy to show. But mine were more hidden behind the scenes. And over the years, I've come to understand my part in the whole thing and given him a lot more grace. Have you heard of that book, What's It Like to Be Married to Me? I cringe every time I hear that title. I have not read a word of it, but I feel like you don't really need to. It's like, that's just it. After a long separation, we finally divorced almost 4 years ago. I kept thinking that God would change him and that he would say, I'll do anything to get our marriage back together. And I thought, oh, I'll put a spiritual spin on this. You know, we'll have this long separation and then, you know, God will just like open our eyes and we'll have this great testimony and we'll be able to tell all of you guys how it was so bad and now it's so good. But it never happened that way. Divorce has become so commonplace that it practically goes unnoticed by the people that are not directly affected. It's often the solution to a bad situation. During my 7 years of separation, I had people frequently say, when are you going to get a divorce and move on with your life? Which it was well-intentioned, but it's kind of short-sighted. I know when I used to hear about divorce, I would just think, oh, that's too bad. But, well, he was kind of, or she was a little, so I guess that's for the best. And I just didn't even think about the damage and devastation going on in the home. Divorce, whether you want it or not, affects every area of your life. It doesn't just affect the two people involved. It's dozens and dozens of relationships. It feels like a death, but in this case, that other person continually is inflicting pain on you. There's not an end. There's a powerful line in the marriage story when the husband says, sometimes I wake up and I wish you were dead. I had days that I felt that way. It would have been so much easier because it's hard, it's shameful, and it's a failure. So I'm divorced, and there's relief in being divorced. My life does not have the drama that it used to have. It's much calmer. I can have dinner whenever I want. I can watch as many Hallmark movies as I want. But now I only have myself to blame, and I often feel ostracized and lonely. There are very few marriages that are easy. Relationships are complicated. My encouragement to those of you who are married and struggling is to keep fighting through. Of course, unless there's abuse, there's always exceptions, but divorce isn't necessarily better. It's not better for the kids. It certainly wasn't for mine. I have three children. They were all out of the house at the time that we separated, and it's been very difficult for them, and it continues to be difficult all these years later. So divorce solves some problems, but it creates others. The Bible says that God hates divorce, and I've thought about that a lot, and I've realized that it's not as much an indictment on those of us who are divorced, but it's more that God is grieving for us, and he knows the pain of divorce. He loves each of us, so of course he hates divorce. Divorce is ugly. It's the hardest thing that I've ever gone through, but God is using me in my brokenness, and I think that's what we all feel like. Thank you.
Wow.
I, every one of you have spoken to my heart this morning. And Michelle, who spoke this morning, sweetheart, I am an oversharer and I also am a crier, so I want you all to, that's a spoiler alert, you're gonna hear some crying this morning. So I am the one that gets also to check off the boxes that I never wanted to check. One of them is, they don't even ask your age when you're over 65. It's just over 65. You get to check the box, and then you get to check the box whether you're single, married, divorced, or widowed. And I get to check that box, and it's not a box that I ever really wanted to check. I will tell you that when my husband and I married 40 years before he died, we were sure that we would both die in our 80s holding hands after great sex. We knew it. We just knew it. Well, nobody dreams of being a widow when they're little. You never hear a little girl say, I want to be a widow when I grow up. And the reason for that is it's really not a great thing. It's hard. It hurts. It's ugly and it's messy and it's a journey that no one does by choice. I'm sitting here right now and I'm looking, Lauren, at you who's crying. Lauren saw me at some of the worst times at the end of my husband's life. It was so ugly and so messy. Tracy has been just such a sweet friend to me. Leslie, Christina was there with us when my husband died. But anyway, it was a journey that I didn't want to take, but I did find myself at this juncture 10 or 11 years ago when my husband died after a very long battle with cancer. And by God's plan, I found myself in this position. And it's really hard to say, God, this is the best thing for my life. This is really what you have for me. But I was a hot mess. I was in a horrible financial situation. I feel like my relationship with my daughters was at stake because they loved their dad so much. And my grief was so great that it was just hard to like reconcile what they were going through in their grief also. But I realized at that point in my life that I had some choices to make. Number one, I could say stuck. Oh my gosh, my nose is running. I could say stuck in my anger and in my despair and in my very messy grief and probably lose the relationship that I had with my daughters. Or I could choose number two, which was to start the really long, hard journey of healing and hope and life. It took a while, but I chose door number two, and I'm so glad I did. I found that God uses things like this in our life to really grow our souls. It's not the way I would have chosen, but I feel like my soul has grown in so many ways, and each one of you spoke to this so beautifully. God just uses things in our life that we don't expect and that we don't necessarily want. And I think that all of our lives are just a series of stories that are woven together that hopefully show God's grace and mercy in our lives. And hopefully it points a picture of redemption in our lives to other people. I, too, had a journey of gratitude when I was at the worst. It happened to be when Ann Boskamp's book first came out, and it changed my life. And you can't be bitter and be grateful at the same time. Some chapters in our life are lovely and easy and fun, and I pray that you all are in that stage. I know there's hard marriages in this room, and then there's some chapters that are really hard and painful. I love the two words, but God, that we find in Scripture so often,
And I found that on the left side of But God was fear, huge fear, discouragement, loneliness, death. But on the right side, we get to experience God's grace and his mercy and light and life. And I am so glad that I did that study when I did. I was in a study with Tracy right after John died on God Heal My Hurts. And that was really so impactful, but also just the relationship that I had with Tracy at that point that got to grow. I learned so much about the power of God in my life. I learned to trust him. I learned that he cared for me in a very sweet and beautiful way. And I also was so blessed by the community. And that is a plug for Grace Fellowship Church. And I see you guys here, and I'm so jealous of that. I didn't have a group like this when I was your age and going through the things that you're going through. So I have a couple charges to you all. And Joy, this kind of speaks, you really spoke to my heart on what you were talking about. Because before I lost my husband, I had this thing in my heart. I would see women in the church that were my age and single, not really your age and single, but my age and single. And this was a secret. I never told anybody this, but I have always called them the invisible women. And I want to tell you that being a single woman, you are invisible. I think we all become invisible as women as we get older, when our children grow up and they don't need us as much. And we do feel a little bit invisible. But when you're single and invisible, it is a tough road. And I want to tell you that there are so many women in this church that are widowed, divorced, or single and never been married. There are women in our church that have never been married and never have children and will never have grandchildren. And I would like to charge all of you to look for those women in our church. They usually are sitting either alone or with other women at church. You will see them in the nursery. They take care of your children in Sunday school. They're in the kitchen helping with the brunches. And I would love to see you ladies in this stage of your life going up to those women at church and just say hi and let them know that you see them. They feel unseen, and it's a really hard place to be in. So the other thing I wanted to say, I want to talk a little bit about my marriage and your marriages. And I have thought after in this 10-year journey that I would love to write a book about marriage. And I never will do it because I procrastinate about everything. But if I were to write that book, the name of my book would be I Wish I Had Made More Jell-O. And I know that's really hard to understand, but you kind of have to know who my husband was to understand this. And the sad thing is that at this point in my journey here at Grace, not very many people know who my husband was, and they didn't know us as a family. What I want to say, what I miss the most about being married is I miss being an us. I've realized in the last few months that I have become a me, a mine, and my dog. And I binge watched 6 episodes of This Is Us the other night, and it just wrecked me. It just that family is just, they're just like all over the map. But anyway, it just made me realize how much I loved being an us. I loved being an us. I loved holding hands with my husband in church. I loved hearing him sing hymns next to me. I loved being a mom. I loved our family. And I so miss being an us. So what this says that I want to relate to you is the whole Jell-O story. My husband, you have to know who he was. He was kind. He was sweet. He was engaging. He was very simple, not simple-minded, but just very uncomplicated, and he was easily pleased. And I missed so many opportunities to be to please him, and one of those was Jell-O. And John loved Jell-O. He loved Jell-O like lots of men love ribeyes. And He literally, if he came home and there was that jiggling, wiggling, artificially flavored, sugared, and colored stuff in the refrigerator, he was thrilled. And ladies, I didn't make enough Jell-O. And that's how hard is Jell-O? I didn't even put sugar in. It was just the kind that you boiled water and threw it together and threw it in the refrigerator. But it thrilled him. And I realized about a few months after he died, I opened a cupboard in our kitchen one day, and 25 boxes of Jell-O fell out and hit me in the head. And I just stood there with this, oh my gosh, there's so much Jell-O left over that I could have made for him. And it was sort of a joke through the years that people would give us Jell-O because they knew how much he liked it. I'm so sorry that I didn't make it for him. And I want to tell you that when your husband is gone, you don't get to do do-overs. And there are things that I regret. And I just want to encourage you all to have marriages with no regrets. And I realized after he died how many times that he spoke my love language by serving me in really small ways and our daughters every single day that we were together. So here's your takeaway. I want to encourage you to be students of your husbands. Get to know the things that thrill them. Get to know the things that make them feel joy and that you love them. I feel that marriage is a perfect example of God's design when Jesus died on the cross for us. That was sacrifice. And I think if there's any word that I could use that I would encourage you towards in your marriage, and that is sacrifice. Learn to live sacrificially for your husbands. I know that there are marriages in this room that are hard. You guys are in a really tough time in your life with toddlers and babies and trying to nurse and trying to keep children from fighting when you're on the phone and all those things. But wherever you are in your marriage, today is a new day. And I would challenge you all to learn to love your husband sacrificially. It really starts with us. I don't believe that men are wired that way. They go to work and they do all those hard things. But those little sacrificial things that we kind of come up with in our brain, if he loves meatloaf and you don't know how to make it, learn to make it. Find one of the women at church that are widows or divorced and have them teach you. If you have a husband that loves apple pie, come to me. I'll teach you how to make it. But I want to encourage you to just, if your husband loves sex, and they all do, and they never get over it, but if tonight, if you've had a long, hard day, put your kids to bed early, go take a hot bath and thrill your husband. I wish I could still do that. I really miss that part of our marriage. But so I want to just encourage you to just experience all and live with all the joy and intimacy that you can have when you live sacrificially in your marriage. And I would also encourage you to, as you're loving your husband sacrificially, look at every day like it might be your last day. And last time I did this talk, I threw all the extra Jell-O that was in my house out, and it's all gone, and I was afraid I'd hit babies in the head if I didn't.